we are starting a section called Proclamation. Now, we had homework for today that most of which will remain undiscussed because it was a quite personal nature. We won't have one of those top that tarnish kind of contest as to who's done the worst job. Everybody would have their own personal stories of that. But one of the things I did want to get some feedback from the class on was on living the life, assignment six, living the life. There was the last sentence of that assignment was finally try to design a schedule of who to praise, when, and for what, and through what media, email, kudo, letter to the boss, voicemail, or something of this type. And what I wanted to get from you just as to share was what kinds of things you found praiseworthy in the associates that you worked with or the people that you have on your list. What kinds of things did you come up with that were praiseworthy, things that you could literally praise somebody for, just types of things? Comment?
The sort of mundane things of operating in a work thing, so like running a good meeting, raising right. 15 times, sort of good responses.
Absolutely.
I mean, so things like that.
Right, running a good meeting. The important aspect of that are those are incremental individual choices, whereas most of the recognition and reward systems that are in our corporations are only for the big picture things. Giant, you know, salesman of the year, you know, quota busters, you know, this kinds of stuff, as opposed to where we live life for the daily individual choices. So that kind of stuff is where it makes a huge, plus not to mention you get a lot more opportunities to praise people when you focus on the very small things that are. Jesus has that saying that he is faithful in little will be faithful in much. And it's easy to camouflage in sometimes what we would call aggregate performance. You can camouflage that. There are ways to manipulate those kinds of things. But it's in the day-to-day, small choices, insights in meetings, the way you treated somebody, kind word here and there, that makes a huge amount of difference.
Especially diplomatic responses to conflict or
good point.
Right.
The subtlety of a freight train model, right? And that's a good point. His comment was that about where diplomacy was shown, where sensitivity, where some what we would call in spiritual terms gentleness, was sometimes shown, where there wasn't an edge to it. It was word in season. It was fit to the recipient and things of this type. So, what's interesting is that when we talk about corporate culture and corporate roles, everyone in the corporate culture and the corporate role always boils down to a human person, with the exception of some of the AI units that we work with. Apart from those exceptions, they all fundamentally will map back into human relationships, human feelings. The toughest among us will be stung by a non-diplomatic remark. We may bury it. Most of us are trained to bury that temporarily, but it festers. It still cooks in the background. We know this. And so the diplomacy aspect, the sensitivity and things of this type shows a gentleness about it that's human. It's very, very authentically human. And correspondingly, that's why it's sometimes quite difficult to do that as well, because it's inauthentic responses are so much easier. It's easier to run over or just to shut up and let them go. So, I mean, you know, Proverbs and Ecclesiastes talk about that a friend, faithful are the rebukes of a friend, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Sound counsel that says, time out, you're off base here, Glenn. You're just dead wrong. That's inappropriate. I love you, and therefore I can tell you that's inappropriate. See? And in a context like that, now of course, as we mentioned the first week when we were talking about Semitic culture in the first century, they could get away with a lot more brutal love, so to speak. You know, their words could be brood of vipers level of material and still be understood as positive comments and one rabbi to another. In our culture, you just have to understand that, you know, it's a little different, and that varies from subculture to subculture as well. So that's good observation about the diplomacy.
I like to put words like steadfastness, faithfulness, cheerfulness,
okay,
kind-hearted, things like that when I'm writing.
Okay. Right.
Service-oriented, you know, right, things like that highlight
right.
the interface.
Absolutely. And that's a human element. So words like steadfastness, perseverance, sensitivity, value.
They're not highly used in the Silicon Valley.
No, they're not. No, there are words that you'll see that we'll have woven through here, a couple that are like the value words, because there is a trend in management science that's in vogue about the servant leadership and value-based relationships, and they are basically working off of borrowed capital from a religious motif of caring for one another, work for the success of others, and things of this type. And so you will increasingly find, for example, one of the most brilliant philosophers of our particular time, Thomas Morris, who was, I think he was chair or vice chair up at Notre Dame University of Philosophy, University of Notre Dame Philosophy in Chicago. He dropped out and founded an institute for philosophical ethics for CEOs. So he lives over on the East Coast now, and CEOs come in and they get worked over in terms of human ethics, thinking clearly about human ethics in the group. And so the fact that everything maps, we're a bunch of humans dealing with one another, the ethics and those kinds of things, which are not as popular, are now coming back in because the old machine run over them just didn't seem to work. Yes, sir, come.
A few minutes ago, you said that they all map back to humans, and you said except for the AI. I'll probably
have a artificial intelligence. Those are the computers that act like humans. They interview you, you know, and they give you feedback, and some of them give therapy, and, you know, this kind of stuff.
I need subtitles.
Okay, gotcha. We'll do that. Good point. Technical sales training where they were trying to train us, the class, to not use technical words when you were presenting. And the trainer in the back sat in the back with one of those little dart guns with the little rubber suction cups on the dart. And every time you used a buzzword or an acronym that nobody understood, you got shot at by one of these little darts. And it was a most interesting feedback mechanism. If we had the people on our five list have little darts for us for every time we tarnish ourselves, we would, of course, be covered in stickers a good bit, right? Okay, any other comments on things that were on your list in terms of kinds of things to praise, to praise of co-workers? Okay. And then the last one was about the tarnish list. Like I said, that's a personal thing. We won't go into that. That's a hard enough story to do personally without having to show that in front of the world, as if the world doesn't already know that. And that's why it shows up on the tarnish list, right? Exactly. Once they don't catch, don't go on the list. We're okay. All right, so tonight we're going to get into... we talked last week about just some specific lifestyle issues that the Christian sort of has to deal with. They come up, and sometimes they affect the way we come across. And we actually segue this time into proclamation, which is how we're going to actually put some verbal content around our experience and our life. Yes?
So speaking about the tarnish list, are you going to say more about, why it's sort of openly...
Yeah, we're going to get into that literally in this section. Yeah, because we're going to have to talk about how you turn tarnished statements or backups into opening one's life before somebody else and smuggling God in at the same time. So yeah, we've got a couple of these things we're going to go through tonight on that.
Any handy tips on chipping away old tarnish?
Well, the old tarnish we're going to deal with in here too. So yeah, we'll go into that. Chipping away is one thing; positioning it away is another. We'll be talking about a couple of different ways.
Positioning it away—that sounds marketing term.
Yeah, it is definitely a marketing term because there's stuff, some stuff that can be positioned away, Well, let's get to that. Okay. Proclamation. We're now in the section on page 10 on turning experience into words. And remember the thing about if you live good, but don't tell anybody about the Lord, you end up getting the credit. And if you live bad and talk about the Lord all the time, nobody gets any credit. Right? So what we're going to try to do is take our Christian experience, and when that has an impact, and Christian experience can be negative to where I'm struggling with something, you know, where I'm really having doubts about something, that's a part of Christian experience, very definitely. And we're going to try to wrap some words around these. And so this is a very practical section where you'll come back. I tell you what, first let's read our assignment for next week. All right, so flip back to, so that you see where we're going with this. Assignment 8, we've got to do 8, 9, and 10, I believe, right? 8, 9, and 10, right. So 8 is write out a works-to-words conversation for the last two compliments you got at work. So when you got two compliments, we're going to try to use the kind of things we're going to talk about tonight to turn those in to perhaps some words. Okay, we're not going to blow it into a full-blown gospel presentation and call to the altar. You know, not that kind of thing, but try to make some things explicit, some articulate. Then assignment 9 is write up a when you lose it recovery. So this is tarnish in the making. So this is when you're starting that first primer coat on the varnish, tarnish. Okay, recovery statement for the last three such situations. And 10 is a proclamation for each person on the starter list. Try to make an initial guess as to which approach you might use. We'll talk about approaches later. But we're going to have to do exactly a recovery and a turning a compliment. That's part of our assignment for next week. Okay. So our first one on page 10, turning works into words. You want to avoid really religious ones like, I want to give all the credit to Jesus. So you have a staff meeting, you've got a team presentation, you, 10 people have got on your team have worked their butts off for two quarters on this project, and you get up there and you say, I want to give all the credit to Jesus. They worked through my co-workers, sure, you know, but my co-workers were just sort of being used of God in this process, right? And I want to give all the... You'll hear athletes do this, and sometimes they can get away with this. Sometimes they can do this. You can see this. I've seen this tennis. I've seen this to Michael Chang. Occasionally, he'll use a softer version of this. He'll get up, instead of saying, I want to give all the credit to Jesus, he'll say, I want to thank Jesus for allowing me to participate and play in this tournament. So he'll actually use it as a thanks without saying, I'm not even here. Right? Theologically, we could go through the issues about, you know, this issue. But you want to avoid some really religious-sounding statements, and you'll see where we're trying to go with this as what we're trying to do. So here's the first little dialogue. Joe, this is where somebody comes up to you. Joe, I just wanted to thank you for your interest in my brother's condition. That was really nice of you, and it meant a lot to Carla and I. So the setup is something that's happened bad to a coworker, and you're aware of it. Maybe you sent flowers. Maybe you said something nice, a word of kindness or something. And they complimented you upon kindness, your interest, or something of this type. And then response is, well, thanks, Bob, for the kind words. But as for being nice, all I can say is progress, finally. And with a chuckle and a shake of your head, you can do the old finally kind of thing. Finally, that generally will provoke a response. I've gotten responses like this that look at you odd. They give you some nonverbal feedback that said, what was that all about? You know, this kind of thing. And, well, the short answer, Bob, is that some 10 years ago, I asked the Lord into my life to fix a couple of broken things, including some selfish traits that I had. It seems that He's been putting in overtime in growing my interest in people around me, and I know He must be pleased that some of it is beginning to produce results. Chuckle. So I appreciate your feedback, honestly, and maybe when things settle down in your situation, we can do lunch, and I'll give you the slightly longer version of this story, because it's been a source of encouragement to me through my share of the challenges. And what's the latest on your brother? Okay? Now, notice what we're doing there, right? We're admitting that we're faulty, that we have tarnish, that this has been something that God has been working on us over time, in my particular more comical version of this. I tend to use a light tone like this because it defuses and depressurizes religious conversation with coworkers and people that I talk with. Now, part of that's a style thing, It can also be done in just a quiet spirit kind of thing, without the chuckles. Or you just have to change some of the words out. And in the remark there is that I'm glad to see that there's some feedback, that some results are occurring. And I'll be encouraged, and I'll keep going. And then real quickly, you're back to the subject of concern. I've got my lick in at this point about the Lord is doing something in me, and this is part of my life. 10 years ago, He started a process, and this was a little bitty piece of transformation. See? So we're gonna go through these things, and we're going to find ways of turning, you know, most everything that you say, there's a way of smuggling the Lord word in there. What you don't want to do is do this in every single conversation, okay? So I'm not suggesting that every third word has to be the Lord, but you pick your shots, you fight your battles, you discern the times, okay, as to when this is. Because a lot of what you have to do is position yourself, and that means you have to identify yourself as a Christian. I remember when I went to Bible college a long time ago. And the first class, and it was an evangelistic Bible college, and the first thing you had to take, of course, was evangelism. So first semester, you know, first class of every day, everybody went through personal evangelism, and the second semester was cult evangelism. Okay? And on personal evangelism, the first thing they said to do when you're in a work setting was to identify yourself as a Christian somehow. So you set up the observation machine for good or ill. For good or ill, they're going to watch you. But now they're going to look at once you identify yourself somehow early as being aligned with the Lord, okay, then things that you do good are going to get somehow tacked on to the Lord, and the things you do bad are going to get somehow tacked on to the Lord. Stakes are higher, but now you got some leverage. Instead of just looking like a nice guy or a sweethearted soul, okay, now maybe there's something different here because God's involved. Okay? And so you'll see most of these have to do with making that first statement, because we're trying to identify ourselves and make a proclamation of our life that God is in my life. God has done something in my life. And I will be a source when we get to the next couple of sections about the opportunities, about would you like to know, you know, is there some interest in finding out this story? Because we're going to be building toward a lunchroom conversation in the course. We're building toward telling your story at lunch, this longer version. Because we'll hint at it in most of these conversations, but there's a longer version. Maybe we'll do lunch one time and we'll talk about this. And I'll give you the slightly longer version than this one paragraph thing. Because that's where we're going to build, where you actually get to share the gospel in your life and from Scripture. So the first one here is just, and notice at the end, I didn't stay on the religious theme. I went back to the issue of concern. See? I'm trying to make the most of opportunities, but I'm not trying to kill the opportunity. I want to. It's a love thing. You keep feeding them. You keep feeding them. You keep helping. So that's the first one, is that's where you got a credit. That's a compliment one. And like I say, you can use a format, something like that, when you do your compliment ones in the assignment. Okay, B, situations of personal accountability. All right, this is where I've got some choices. I've got some trade-offs in front of me. And you're just sharing your life. I know my Lord would be somewhat disappointed in my choice if I decided to compromise my ethics or compromise my standards or compromise my goals or compromise my values by doing this. Okay. Now, in that statement, the couple of points there. In the earlier days when I would use a statement like this, I would use my chuckle and I'd say, I know the Lord would bless me for the sucker if I went down this road and did this kind of thing, because bust in that kind of context was okay. But then as I got more and more in the senior ranks, I started worrying about whether it would be taken too negatively and too hostile. And so I started choking it down to somewhat disappointed. So that what you've got is an emotional response. You're trying to show the heart of God that He's not angry. I know God would be upset with me if I did this, because they already believe God is vengeful already. They already, you know, we don't need to support that particular view. But grieved is you can use grieved. It's a little stronger word, but disappointed or somewhat disappointed puts it where it really is, because that is the way that God feels about when we make those choices. He's disappointed. You know, he's not going to get angry with his believers, you know, but he's somewhat disappointed. And so it puts a it draws out the heart of God in that phrase. They get to see that God is perhaps good. And the disappointment, the fact that it filters into my choice of decision about this when I'm faced with an alternative, that and notice it's not I put it in terms of compromising my standards, my goals, see? Because I picked those goals up from my Lord. See, so I you can sometimes change that if I decided to compromise His standards or biblical standards, but you just have to be a little careful with that as before you start looking like a Bible thumper, right? Because one of the things we're going to always come back to here is this has to be your experience lived. This is your particular experience. So these have to be your standards that you agree on. Now, there will be situations where you can turn into a God and I disagree over these standards, but I'm learning over the years that He's probably more correct than I am as I play with these values myself. You can make a distinction between I'm not there yet and we're still fighting over some verses in the Bible, as long as you do that in the right tone and the right style. So under personal accountability, this has to do with a future choice that you're facing, and you've got somebody that you're sharing with that you're close enough to where you can discuss this, where you can say, I'm wrestling with this, and I really don't want to disappoint my Lord. It's been too good to me over these years, and this is something I really want to do right. I want to choose the right standards and the right values here and honor the right things. And see, that's a gentle way of injecting the Lord into that kind of conversation. Into that kind of situation. Then, when you go into if you fail in B and you fall into C, situations of past culpability, okay, where you blew it, is where you blew it. The way I have used this in the past is this. This kind of, my Lord has poured a lot of remedial work into my life about just that issue. And I'm thankful for improvements in that area. This is where somebody's, you know, you've done something wrong. You blew up in a meeting. We'll have another case in D where it's like anger related. But in something you did 10 years ago that's tarnish, or 5 years ago that's tarnish, or 6 months ago that's tarnish, if it's far enough away, then you can say, yep, you know, I have a situation. You know, I remember 6 months ago this happening and me making a really bad choice here. This was really bad. It reflected poorly upon the values that I hold. You know, my personal integrity, my Lord, things of this type. I understand that, you know. But I've got a lot of remedial work that the Lord's been working in my life. People have come in. I've gotten some insight into this. I'm working on this, and I'm hoping to see progress in it. Now, there I am. I'm fallen. I'm a fallen dude, because they're going to be a fallen dude too, and they're going to go right there. It's like a parenting. If you don't convince the kids that you go through tons of struggles inside with self-identity, with choices over the future, they grow up thinking the adults just live at this surface life and everything is fine and you fight a lot, but you know there's no internal struggles. Everybody feels good about themselves. And since they don't, they assume that they're weird and sick. And instead of everybody's this together, we're trying to all help each other in the lifeboat. And so one of the things you got to do here is make sure that they get the right picture of Christians, that Christians are not perfect, they're forgiven. And the old, God, be patient with me, your God is not finished with me yet. So in past culpability, you can point it out, you have to admit that it's, you know, tarnish, but you also got to recognize that God's doing remedial work, you know, and try to, I use literally the remedial work phrase, and I'll talk about how I use it in some situations in a minute. Go ahead, Dean.
Are you thinking about time when you're going to bring up this past event, or when somebody else?
No, this is when either I suspect that they have this against me, or they bring it up. And a typical situation, the bad one is when you get blindsided with it, with there's Glenn talking about religion again. Remember 6 months ago, you know, when we caught him stealing all the coffee out of the coffee room, you know, to take home the fancy stuff we had bought, you know, whatever, right? And I didn't do this 6 months ago. There was no office for me. So just let's be clear about this on the tape. I'm not a coffee thief. But in case you can get blindsided like this, right in the middle of, you know, perhaps a comment that you're making, Or if you suspect that they know about this and you want to deal with it, even though they would not bring it up, okay, you can bring it up in the context of, you know, hey, I've got my share of faults. I remember 6 months ago I did something quite public. You probably remember it. It was when they caught me coming in over the weekend stealing the coffee out of the coffee room. You know, I just, I had a problem with that. And God's been putting overtime in my life working on that. The public embarrassment of that woke me up. It was a wake-up call. I needed to deal with this kleptomania, whatever. You know, kleptomaniac. You know, if you're a kleptomaniac, can you take something for it? You know, and I don't know, you know. And so in that kind of scenario, you could bring it up if you suspect it's an issue. Or if you need to make it an issue, but it's something of that type. If you get feedback, I mean, if you don't address it and it is an issue, it shows up as nonverbals later on in the conversation, of course. Because they'll discount your words and your credibility will go down somewhat. And you'll get the smirk look. And it's the smirk that's, you know, like, yeah, right, yeah, listen to who's talking. You know, the smirk is the old ad hominem. Who were you to tell me about this? You know, you were the guy we caught with a 5-pound bag of coffee in your backpack or your off briefcase or whatever. And sometimes you'll surface it through the smirk and the nonverbals. So if you suspect it's an issue, you can go ahead and use it. Because if it was a wake-up call to you, go ahead and get it out there. Because the point is, they're going to have their own wake-up calls as well. See? And then the day may come, if you share that with them about the coffee, and the public embarrassment and the wake-up call, like many of the things we're going to talk about, the day that they get caught stealing the equal packet, right, and get busted for that, then they may come to you and say, hey, how did you deal with this? How did you deal with the embarrassment? You know, you may get that insider relationship on the basis of your previous culpability. So, again, this is critical. The remedial work, this is slightly off the subject, but I have seminary background, but I've always been in the IT field. So when I would have situations going on account calls with when they'd bring the executive into the account to visit, do the, you know, the glad handing and stuff like this with some other manager, and you're in the car with the local manager that's driving you to the customer. And so there's a captive audience there for a certain amount of time. You see them maybe once, twice, maybe three times a year. So you might get a follow-up chance to visit with them. And if the door is open for you to share a little bit about your background or your testimony, or like, how did you get in this business, or something of this type, I would talk about the fact that, well, actually, I tried to get out of this business. I tried to actually go into the ministry. I mean, I literally, after, you know, finishing graduate school in computer science, I actually went and prepared to be a minister this time. I spent 5, 6, 7 years preparing for this, and I thought I was going to go be a minister, and it turns out I just needed that much extra work on me. I needed remedial work so I could go do this with a good personal integrity or something like this. Now, click. I have made a position statement, if you haven't noticed there, right? I have sit there and said, I needed work. I didn't realize it was 7 years of grueling education work, but I've made a position statement there, and that I'm flawed, that there's remedial work. And generally, at that point, you know, fortunately, out in the field, I don't have as much tarnish, you know, because they wouldn't have seen me day to day at the office, per se. But that's still how I'll use the remedial work phrase with a chuckle, because it communicates both God's active involvement in my life, that He is working on me, and then He's fixing some of the things I'd like to see fixed. And that was just one of the things that I used personally to position my, you know, point out that I am a believer and that I'm obviously not perfect either at the same time. Okay, D is when you lose it. All right, so this is when you just blew it up, like I say, fresh coat of tarnish. You go to Vince. Vince, sorry about the blow-up yesterday. I didn't manage my frustration too well. I know. I disappointed myself, my rather patient Lord, and probably your team at the meeting too. I wanted to offer a friendly apology for both that time and the next time, said with a chuckle at the end. Okay, and what that does is that, again, it uses the disappointment word instead of I angered God. You know, now I have to offer a chicken. up. But it has a disappointed, but it's not just him that I disappointed. You know, it wasn't just God, but it's myself, and probably your team with the way I handled that situation. I want to apologize, like I say, for that. And, like I say, in the next phrase about, and the next time that occurs, with a smile, says that I'm not perfect yet either. I'm probably going to blow up, but I'm going to come and apologize. I'm going to recognize that I'm where my mistakes are. So in cases of anger, or the flip side is where you did not say, where your sin was not a sin of commission, but a sin of omission. When you didn't speak up, when you didn't defend somebody at a meeting where you needed to be, where you were silent instead of strong for what needed to be said. Still being strong, still being said diplomatically and with gentleness. But it's use the same kind of thing, Vince, I'm sorry about something that happened at the meeting last Tuesday. When it came up about this issue, I was silent. I did not speak up, and I really should have. This was a mistake. I feel bad about this. I don't know why, but I considered it wrong, and I actually wanted to ask an apology of you and your team. I should have said something more positive about this, or should have defended your efforts, whatever the setting is. I just wanted you to know that. And so, again, it shows a humanity about the thing, an authenticity about it. These kind of things are not particularly positive. And I was disappointed. I'm sure my Lord was a little disappointed. And maybe even your team was disappointed that I didn't say something about it. So, again, I'm trying to work in three different things. Humans, the team, the Lord, and me. Because I want to make sure that, they understand that I'm being transformed over time according to this God, His heart. So when you lose it, E is let them see you struggle. Okay, this is the open heart. Remember we talked about, I think, the first night about Jesus the friend, that he opened his heart up, that he shared, my soul is deeply troubled to the point of death. Come sit with me. I need some friends here in the garden. Just stay here with me. Let them see you struggle. And here's the dialogue here. I wish I could say that I didn't have a problem in that area, but I would be lying. My Lord knows that I struggle with this, and He's been patient with me, and has provided actually some very helpful input through some insightful people, actually, as I try to grow beyond this struggle, or grow beyond this problem. And there what I've got is the basic positioning. And like I say, you've got to recast all these into words that sound like you, that don't have long vowels like five and nine, Southern talk and stuff like this. So you got to cast it in your own idiom. But the point there is that the key phrase is there, I wish I could say I was beyond this, but I'm not. I still struggle with this. Lord has been patient, been helpful. There have been people in here that have been helping me with this and giving me some insight and encouraging me. And so I have some confidence that I'm going to improve. I'm going to make incremental improvement. But right now, it is a struggle. It is a struggle. And so what I've got there is, like I say again, reality. It's where we all live as Christians in our lives. And I still got the Lord working on that, being patient with us. And it's a nurturing kind of image of what we're trying to portray, of what life is like inside the family of God. What life is like inside the family of God. He's nurturing. He gets disappointed when we make mistakes. Encourages us. Get back up. Try it again. Get back up. Try it again. You fell off your bike. You didn't. You made a B+ instead of the A- that we were targeted for. Let's try again. Let's try again. Let's keep going. So we are opening up lives there. Now this one is to someone without any Christian background. So this is somebody that was raised without a Christian background. And there's a phrase here that sometimes is interesting because, let's read it. You know, your lack of background may actually make it easier for you to see Jesus and the issues more clearly, with less preconceptions from what you were taught, perhaps. See? This is one of the advantages, in many cases, of the unchurched. People that did not grow in our culture, either grew up in non-Western culture or grew up in a more secular version of Western culture. So they have fewer stereotypes about what God's like. They all have them because the media, sort of works against us here a little bit. We get Christians and God generally get portrayed in odd fashions, and it's hard to avoid that cultural impact. or cultural influence. But the point of the statement was is that there is an issue with preconception. So if somebody says, well, you know, I don't know about this. I know nothing about this whatsoever. And so I'm maybe implicitly in brackets, so I'm too tired to look at this. I'll never catch up to these people that went to Sunday school every morning and all you churchy types that know all the lingo and about, you know, I have no background like that. Well, that's where you say, well, you know, that's actually good news in today's culture. That means you get a fresh start. You get to look at this and evaluate for yourself who Jesus is. Look at this. So here's the New Testament. Go read this, sucker. You know, here's a couple of passages where you see Jesus in action. Here's some of his words. And read that. And let's go talk about it. And I'll tell you, we'll have a good conversation. I'll talk about the five preconceptions about that passage and how different groups do different things with it. And tell me what you see. What do you see about the heart of God in this passage? The woman at the well. Tell me, what kind of impression do you get about Jesus there at the woman in the well story? Let's talk about it next Tuesday, whatever. So, if someone wants to balk because they don't have a Christian background, this is a kind of comment you can make to try to defuse that for them. The next one is a little more difficult. It's to a lapsed Christian. All right, so this is somebody that used to be walking with the Lord or used to be think that they were pretty religious and then they fell away. In the old days, we'd say backsliding or whatever. So a lot of times these people need hope and encouragement, and that's what part of this is designed to do. So this one reads like this. You know, this period away from the Lord may actually end up being a very important part of your experience for rebuilding a better and more substantial relationship with Him. It's happened to a lot of folk, and honestly, most of us experience, you know, occasional periods of distance, even in all healthy relationships. You know, there's closer and further away, and there's issues of estrangement and things of this type. I mean, it's a personal relationship here with God, so why would we be surprised that it doesn't have that same level of reality to it? So this may be, like I say, that lapse away may have been able to clear some of your head about some of this and whatever you were brought up, and this may be good news. This may be an important backdrop as you rethink what a relationship with God probably should be like, depending upon your background and what you were taught. See? And what we're getting at there is to try to hit the reset button. We're trying to get them to say, okay, I'm not going to stay in this guilt or this bad feeling I have about this. I'm not going to live and wallow around the fact that I fell away from God or something like this. But I'm going to say, okay, perhaps that's part of a spiritual journey. And now that you mention it, I can take a fresh look at this because I'm not in the middle of it now. Maybe I can take a fresh evaluation of what God is like now that I've been away for a while. And it's, you know, and a lot of people will have this experience. This is like the college kid that goes off to school. You know, they don't do well at home. You know, they're fighting. They're in a hurry to get out. And then they go home. And after a couple of years, home looks okay. It may be a couple of months for some people. A couple of decades in some of our cases. But eventually, the stock value of the parents go up, and home looks a little better, and you can come back and you have a fresh view of your folks, fresh view of your siblings, and you can make sometimes a better evaluation for good or ill. Sometimes you have to write them off and say they don't have the emotional wherewithal to meet to have a full relationship, and I'll enjoy them at the level they are instead of pining away after something that you couldn't have as a kid or something. You know, but you get a clearer perspective sometimes. And that's what you're... And a lot of people go through this. Christians go through this. Clear Christians will go through this undulation, the law of undulation, as Screwtape Letters would talk about it. There are times of dryness in our experience. There are times of just parched hearts. There's what the devotionalists call the dark night of the soul. Those times where, you know, heaven's made of brass, bronze, and you can't get through. And these are parts of Christian experience. It doesn't mean that we necessarily pull away or we lapse or anything. But if somebody came at you and said, fruit of the Spirit is joy, how much do you have today? You say, -3. You know, but it averages out higher than zero over the course of experience. But today is a -3 day. And again, what you're trying to point there is try to get them to rethink. Say, okay, well, I'll take a fresh look at this God. Now, H is in a friendship setting. Now, this is where you, this is somebody that you, you do have a friendship where you can open up your life and ask them about their life. Some of these you can't. You know, you, so a lot of the office workers that we, that you'll be thinking about here and praying about here will be those that you don't have that closeness, and the closeness will be created artificially by an opportunity. There'll be some disaster or something that happens bad in their life where everybody becomes human again when these disasters occur. And there will be a bonding situation that occurs around that crisis. Whether it's a bad crisis or a positive crisis. There are positive crises that have to do with job changes and, you know, do I accept this promotion? What should I do? Those are more positive, but they still have a crisis element because they're deep. They impact us as humans. And in a friendship setting here is where you have a little broader relationship with this individual. So if you look at the first site there, I've got, this is where, like I said, this is somebody that you could ask this question of. What event or decision of your life would you say has been the most meaningful? Okay, not the most pleasurable or the funnest thing you've ever done. You know, the most meaningful, and then what? Kind of answers you get on most meaningful are going to be things like the birth of my first child, the death of my sister, my second job, getting fired from my third job, whatever. You'll get something. Normally when you'll ask that, unless they have a canned speech that they use on people normally, you'll get a pause here because people don't think about the deep things of life. We don't think about the deep things of life until God forces us to with these things. And so you'll ask them this question, and they'll back up. And sometimes, depending upon how witty they are, they'll make a quick joke. They'll make a quick comment about the most meaningful thing was that last margarita. You know, or be something like that. And then you'll say, no, really. And then they'll go into the pause mode, and they'll reflect, and they'll scour their experience for the things that impacted them the most, but they won't know why. You're asking them a feeling question, and they'll go search through what feelings, you know, what did they feel? What was the biggest blunt thing that hit them is what they will come up with here. And so then you say, why? Right? Why was that the most meaningful? And there you're going to get, they will start thinking about that as to what the impact of that was. They may never have considered it, because normally when they hit you, between the eyes, you don't have time to think through that, and sometimes you get thrown back into the fray before you had time to reflect upon your experience. Okay, and so what this does again is it attempts to get them to articulate a value. Why was this meaningful? Well, this was meaningful because it taught me. I saw new life. I saw death. I saw misfortune. I saw something for the first time in real clarity. Right. And then they have told you something about them now. They have told you something about their values and what counts as values. And everything that they normally will say there, apart from, not even everything, excuse me. There's a category of things that they'll say that will be in this category, that will be about the importance of this or the value of this. What you will also uncover here will be the dark cynics. In other words, sometimes the people that are the most successful, when you ask them like this, it was this experience, why? Because they taught me that life sucks and then you die. You know, one of those kind of comments. And that the best thing to do is ignore all this stuff and just beat the hell out of the competition. You know, whatever violent metaphor they use to try to squelch the pain. Okay? Well, either way, you learn a need basis that's awesome. Because somebody has got something buried in that second case, so deep in there, right, that there may be an opportunity. It may be difficult to get to, because when it gets buried and buried and buried, but fundamentally everybody is still human, deepest inside, and everybody wants relief. It doesn't matter whether I believe I can never have it, I will still become naive on certain occasions. There's hope. Springs eternal. It's irrepressible. Right? So there's always an opportunity because you can't get away from the image of God that's built into us somehow. But this will surface real quickly. You know, if you get really the dark humid remark there, you know that there's some real pain there. if you get just the more meaningful, and it's like I learned that there was more to life than X when this happened. See, you've got a base. You've got a base to work with in terms of a value that's already identified that's something important. It's told you something about your friend and that you'll be able to map experiences and share, generally, a lot of times, share that value with them as you go forward. So the first one was to surface one. The second one was, what event in your life would you say has changed your thinking most about values and God? Or values, family, and God. Okay? And why? The key phrase there is what has changed your thinking. And you're pointing out that thinking does change. And the reason this particular phrase works, at least opens it up, in my experience, has been is that everybody assumes that they believe what they were taught until you ask a question like, how has your thinking changed from what you were taught? See, only when you get asked that, nobody that I know of, an adult, will say, oh, it hasn't changed. I've just believed it all from everything they told me from as I grew up. Nothing's ever changed, right? When they back up and say, well, I guess I don't believe... Well, let's see, I don't believe God is this way anymore. I don't believe that this religion is the only way to God, or I don't believe this, that, and the other. And you'll discover, but whatever they say, see, that's not my point with the comment. My point with the comment is to get them thinking about it in terms of how it changes. Because I'm going to try to influence them toward another change. And if they're already used to accepting the thing that, if they don't throw it away because it's change, if they don't use that normal human resistibility to change, resistance to change. If you say, well, okay, you've changed here. That shows progress. You think about these things. I've got something else for you to think about. I mean, I'm not going to suggest you use those words, but that's logically where we're going to go with this. Okay? So these kind of questions, and then what has changed your thinking the most, and then you always ask the why question to get them to develop it further. And then you may get, again, the very... angry cynic, the bitter soul against God, may show up there, or the despairing soul that's given up on God accepting them or ever knowing if God exists. You can sometimes get that with the why out of it too. This only works generally with friends that, you feel comfortable asking a heart question like this. You have to build friendships before you can presume this level of intimacy with people. You have to prove yourself loyal, prove yourself trustworthy before you can ask questions like this, or they'll just sort of blow you off and you'll look like a meddler.
Ben, okay. Talking about resistance to change, one of my one-liners for that is I hate change and I can't stand the way things are.
Yeah, right. Caught between the two. I hate change right, absolutely. That's very definite in there. There's the old saying about it's not that you can't teach an old dog new tricks, is that the old dog is not convinced the new tricks work any better than the old tricks do. See, there's a conversion of paradigm issue and what counts as value that also shows up in those kind of those situations. Okay? The next one, each one of these is an approach. So when I say which approach might you initially think about taking toward one of the five, these are the kinds of approaches that we're talking about. So this next approach is called their crisis personal strength approach. How's that for a good technical term for it? I guess I should make that into an acronym, shouldn't I? So the TCPSA, their crisis personal strength approach. So here's how the conversation goes. Jennifer, what's the latest on your dad's accident? Well, they moved him from intensive care to a regular room last night, and the family flew in this morning. We've got another specialist involved, and the really important lab work results should be in by the weekend. Jim is taking kid duty, and I'm staying at the hospital with Dad as much as I can. Thanks for asking, Susan. Wow, friend, your response. Wow, friend, that's a lot to deal with. How are you handling all this inside? Okay. Where are you finding the strength to manage that situation and your work here? Okay. Now, what you're trying to do there is just get them to say, I don't know. You're trying to get them to open up a little bit and create an ad hoc friendship around this circumstance. Because the simple fact that you knew that it hurts, because you said, wow, that's a lot to deal with. How are you dealing with that? Right? the fact that you show empathy, which is a powerful, powerful bonding agent among us. I mean, we want people to come be empathetic to us, and sometimes we'll even endure their advice on how to fix our problems. In some cases, just to get the sympathy or the empathy from that. And so in this particular case here, where you've said, wow, that's a lot, how are you dealing with this friend? Right? That's where the value is, not in what they say next. The value is in you showed love, you showed some care, and some compassion for how they're dealing with it. You ask them a question. And then, theoretically, you're asking maybe for the first time the question of where are you getting the strength? See? Because they'll either say, I don't know, and that'll be a question now that's bubbled up into the conscious mind. Or they'll say, I don't know, and I just realized in their thinking. And whatever they say, you can always go back to it and say, you know, the other day when I asked you this question, you said this. Okay? And then you can have a follow-on into that conversation. Either something of, I really appreciate you being honest with me about that. A lot of people wouldn't be that open. That's a beautiful trait in you. That's a good trait. Or, you know, I thought some more about that, and I remember a time that I had like that, where the way I had to deal with it was just ignore it, bury it, cry it out, go smash the dog, whatever it was that they said that their response was. You know, I remember a situation where I had to deal with the same thing. I know that hurts. And anything I can do to help. See, it's just that statement of solidarity that perhaps opens it up and creates that loving relationship. Because when Jesus walked through Galilee, how many long-term friends did he build? Not a whole lot. Because they stayed and they walked around with him. But how many ad hoc friends did he build for 10 minutes that changed their lives forever? Tons and tons and tons and tons. See, that's what our office experiences are. A lot of it is. We'll make some friends. We'll build some long-termers. But we'll have more 30-minute friends. 30-minute friends where the life changes, where two lives intersect for 30 minutes. It happens if you travel a lot. Got a bunch of those. You know, where it's just 30 minutes you get with somebody. And you create something that's just like this. It's an intersection of two lives and where love can flow. And the Lord can perhaps bring something out of that. So that's the personal strength approach. Now the second one is a little more bold. Okay? The second one is called their crisis personal prayer request approach. Okay? Jennifer, what's the latest on your dad's accident? Well, they moved him from intensive care to regular room, same dialogue last night, and the family flew in this morning. We've got another specialist involved, and the really important lab work will be in by the weekend. Jim's taking kid duty, and I'm staying at the hospital with Dad as much as I can. Thanks for asking. Susan, wow, friend, that's a lot to deal with. Jennifer, would you object if I had our weeknight class Bible study, pray for your dad, the doctors, your family, and you, without me mentioning any names, okay? Any names, of course. Would you feel comfortable with that? Right? Now, that's what the no mentioning names are, because they don't want to show up, you know, have on an email marketing list for church bulletins. Right? So, anonymity. And you will surface there. What you've done is you've done expression of care. You're not just praying for Dad, but praying for the doctors, the family, and them. But it's a commitment to action, which is even more than empathy. See, empathy says, I know exactly what you're feeling, and I'm human here with you. That's a solidarity. The next one is, I don't have any concrete ways in terms of like bringing food. Sometimes you do. But I've got something that I can do that's meant a lot to me. Would it be okay if I had our weekly prayer group to pray for, you know, the situation during the next 4 weeks, 6 weeks, or while it's going on? As long as we didn't mention your name, and it wouldn't be anything like that or anything like it. Would you be comfortable with that? See? And if it's said the right way, you'll get a sure, why not, from people that are even against prayer, depending upon where this is. If it's done love, sometimes you'll say, well, you know, if they've been burned by religion, you know, with like they went to revivals and never got off mailing lists, or they went to meetings and got hounded for years about converting or something like this, they will balk perhaps at this. Even when you say, without mentioning any names, right, they assume that they're on your target list. They may even ask you, am I in your top five? That grid from your class that you were at last Tuesday night? You know. And so this has to be done gently. But there are very few people I know that would, unless they have a public position against Christianity and prayer, that wouldn't say, yeah, Yeah, as long as it's love and this kind of thing. So you have to be a little careful about that. But if the person is a gentle, you know, person, and you've had, if you don't suspect it, you can go ahead and lead with this, because prayer is an innocent enough thing. It never hurts. You don't want to get any arguments over the theological efficacy of prayer. Does it fix things here? This is an expression of love and care and of action in the part of others. So that's the personal prayer request approach. The next one was their crisis, which is what I call the past prayer approach. Okay, so this is still something happening in their life. And it reads something like this. Andy, I wanted to ask how Susie was doing since the incident last week. What? Oh, she's doing better. The tension has died down a bit and all the players are more calm. Does it look like there are going to be any legal repercussions of the incident? Thanks. I was just wondering. I overheard you telling Sam about it last week, and my husband, roommate, closest friend, and I have been praying about the situation at supper or at breakfast or over coffee since then. Glad to hear the situation's improving. Thanks. Thanks for the update. And then you're done. Okay? Now, what did I do there? What did I communicate there? Right? That I have already taken action, and it didn't embarrass them. See? They didn't get called. We didn't, you know, invite them over to the meeting or something like this. But I took it personally to do it quietly without fanfare. I didn't make commitments. I'll pray for you every morning for the next 90 days. You know, we didn't do anything like this. It was just quiet because it's woven into my life. See, that's what it's woven into my life, the life of my husband, roommate, friend, whatever. And that's a past prayer. And the reason this has a what? Oh, she's doing fine. Is this is where you didn't ask because you didn't have that kind of relationship. In other words, Andy didn't come to you for this. Andy was talking to Sam. See, Sam's the friend. You're not the friend here yet. See, so it's the I overheard, and you know I didn't want to, you know, ask you much about it. I realized it was a personal thing, but I did want to just say how it was going because we were praying about it. And we just did it for the last couple of weeks, and just want to see if things were how things were going. See, so it's very low key, but again, it communicates that you're different. You do things, you pray, and you're not nosy, and you're not, you know, obnoxious about it, and you don't presume on friendships that don't exist. So it's again, that's their crisis where you've prayed for them. Now, I don't have to tell you that you don't make this stuff up, right? If you go up there and say, well, you know, my spouse and I have been praying about this, you know, for the last couple of weeks, and we just want to see how we're doing. But you aren't married. you don't want to say. You don't want to say this. Right. You just don't know. Yeah, it's been a long trip. He's stationed over in Saudi. This all has to flow from the life. That was where we first tried to find. You don't say, 10 years ago, the Lord's been working on me on this. If the Lord hadn't been working on you for 10 years, because He'll start working on you for a different thing immediately if you start telling lies about Him and His past. So you'll have a credibility problem there that's different. So past prayer approach. The next one is not a crisis, but a felt need. So this is something that's a need, that's emotional or personal issues, but it's not precipitated by a crisis event. And I give an example of felt needs: anxiety, discouragement, disillusionment, alienation. And the sample dialogue I've got there is: Martha, you look really discouraged. What's going on, friend? Nothing much, I guess. And I suppose that's the problem. I try as hard as I can at X, but nothing ever happens. I can't make this work. I don't get promoted. I don't get recognized. Nothing seems to work. My team doesn't. Whatever. Nothing much happens. In that case, it's a discouragement problem, or perhaps a disillusionment problem. Now, the tone of this next response, you got to be careful with. I got a little note out here to make sure you don't come across wrong. But let me just read it the way it sits first. Gosh, I know that feeling well. Been there, done that many, many times, friend. I always got through them in the past, of course, like most folks, and like you, you know. But I only learned later that I didn't have to trudge through those times alone. That there were resources in the spiritual aspect of my life that I could draw on. Okay? my Lord, now I'm going to fill in content for that vague euphemism expression that I used in the previous sentence, okay, that there were resources in the spiritual aspect of my life that I could draw on. My Lord was apparently interested in my emotional health as well as the other aspects of my life. God cared about the way I felt about these kinds of situations. But that's another story, another time, maybe over lunch someday. But back to your situation. You got any ideas on how to change the pattern? You got any thoughts on how you're going to see what next you're going to try to move it forward? Right? Now, the reason I got a little footnote here on the side to me was make sure you don't sound like, yeah, I've been there and I've grown past that. Now I'm past the point of disillusionment, discouragement through my spiritual superiority to all such people as yourself. If you're feeling what you do under the circumstances, but what are you doing under there? Achievers are above the circumstances, you know, whatever. And so when you do there, been there, done that many times, it's not like I'm not there anymore and I'm not going to be there. You might want to add a phrase depending upon how you come across. Been there, done that, know exactly that, and I will no doubt be there again. I had one myself, oh gosh, a year and a half ago, like this. But what was different at that time, I got to admit, was I started dawning on me after 20 years or so that I didn't have to go through this completely alone, that there were some resources in my spiritual life that I could draw on to help me get through some of these tough times. And my Lord's been really sort of working on me and encouraging me on this. And so I'm making a little progress. So, but in your situation, what are you thinking? You know, have you got any ideas on what you're going to do next on this? You know, you got any idea why the situation's there? So just make sure that when you do, if you use something like this, you know, but yeah, I understand exactly, been there, done that a lot, that you don't come across that I'm completely through it, that it's not a challenge now. We'll see this a little bit more when we get into the next couple ones. But right here, like I say, your point here is whatever it is, as long as you can honestly say this, that this is something I have been through, that I have felt, like you probably have more than once yourself, you know. And after X number of years, I finally dawned on me that I had some other resources that I could tap into that I wasn't taking advantage of early. Now it's a little easier, still hard. I struggle every day, you know, still have my struggles, but it's not quite as difficult as it used to be. I get through them, this kinds of things. And so, again, the message there basically is you don't have to live life alone here, but that you're going to go through it, and that, hey, maybe there's a place where you can find some resources too. This is what I found. One beggar telling another beggar where to find bread. Right? Without being superior, that's the point. On any of these, you got to make sure that it's not a matter of, oh, I've overcome all of the crises you'll ever face, and I've done well because of God. Okay, the next one now is we switch to from their crisis to your crisis. Okay, so this is again the open life thing. So where somebody comes to you and says, Larry, you seem kind of down today. Is anything wrong? Okay. Yeah, we just found out my little sister has been diagnosed with a terminal illness. And so it's obviously a pretty tough time for us. We were really, really close. I've been through tough times before, of course, John. And my Lord has always given me the perspective and strength inside to make it through without bitterness or permanent cynicism. So I know I can count on him again. But it never gets much easier. It's always a time for deep reflection on life and death and the why and the things that matter and the things that don't, if you know what I mean. And thanks for asking, John. I really appreciate your interest and concern. All right, now what have I got in there? See, I've got an honesty that says, I've been here before. I'm here now. It hurts like hell. Okay? But that God's gotten me through these before. He didn't heal the people. He didn't raise the dead. But He stood with me through this so that I ended up that without bitterness or permanent damage, permanent cynicism, that it didn't completely destroy my family or our lives, so it wasn't a complete defeat. Because one of the issues that we'll talk about when we get a little bit later on is that you cannot make promises for God other than the ones He promises. So you can't promise that God's going to do a healing or God's going to solve a problem or get them out of some sticky situation. What you can promise is the same promise He gives us, lo, I am with you always to the end of the earth, and I will be with you. Paul said, He stood with me. I faced the lion. He saved me from the jaws of death. But when Paul bragging about his the hardships that he went through, day and night in the deep, you know, 3 days without food, beaten with rods, the 39 lashes, you know, 3 or 4 times. God didn't stop those experiences. God didn't stop those experiences, but he stood with Paul. And when Paul ended up, it didn't kill him inside. It didn't kill him inside. My family's alive. I'm personally healthy, etc. And so that's the perspective that has to be, is that God is real and God is close and he gets us through. He doesn't make this a Pollyanna world. Pollyanna world. This world is... They used to contrast the sweet and by and the nasty here and now. Right? And God is down here. He's in the nasty here and now with us. We'll talk about when we get closer to the gospel that this is one of the strengths of the Christian message, is where when the Messiah is called a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. But that speaks to our heart when we get acquainted with sorrows. And that he's not some distant God that always lives in eternal bliss, and that by denying your desires you can distance yourself from all suffering. You know, no, he steps right into the suffering. Just steps right in the middle. And so, you know, when Jesus, you think about this when you go through experiences of difficulty. When Jesus, you know, the New Testament says, grief, mourn with those who mourn and rejoice with those who rejoice. And so when I mourn and when I grieve, guess what God is doing with me? If he follows the same ethic that he tells me to do. No reason why he's not weeping up there. Because I know he is. Mourning with those that mourn. He has greater, much greater powers of empathy than I'll ever can even speak about. Right? And so his solidarity with human suffering is particularly particularly strong. So what we're trying to do here on this is we're trying to open our life and show where God is in the middle of that, no matter when it's difficult and when it's tough. Then a smaller version of that is your big decision. So under N, big decision, this is where you're facing a big decision. This is when you do have options, when you do have alternatives, right? Laura, you seem to have been lost in thought all day. Some of them will say space cadet mode, lost in space all day, whatever their phrase is. You've been out of it. What kind of puzzle are you working on? Ha, you're probably right, pal. I bet I have seemed a little spaced out today. I've got a pretty big decision that I've got to make next week. And it keeps popping up in my mind. It's not a simple decision. So I'm having to consider the impact that it might have on all the important relationships I have, commitments to. My kids, my parents, my job, and my Lord. Maybe in my friends and my groups, whatever. Okay? So I guess I have been a bit distracted on and off today, but it'll all be over soon. Smile one way or another. It's got to be done next week. Now, what I've done is I've just, in this conversation, said, I'm approaching a difficult decision. It's not simple. I'm trying to think about the important things to me, make it for the impact of how this decision impacts relationships. And you're listing important relationships that everybody would agree on, family, friends, job, and then you've got an extra one in there, call in my Lord. Right? And so, boom, all of a sudden, if you've never used the word Lord before, right? All of a sudden, you're stereotyped right there. Boom. With this little statement, boom. They've got, not only are you nominally a Christian on the basis of this simple statement, the fact that somehow it's right in their value, it looks almost human, because it's up there with family, friends, job, and you think about how it impacts it, and you called it a relationship, as opposed to how this impacts my religion. See? And so when you constantly use relationship words like this and value words like this, a different message comes across about, you know, who God is, the heart of God, and what God is in your life. See? It's a little simpler like that. So again, it's a decision where you're facing something in the future, and you're going to... and again, don't go around deliberately looking puzzled. Don't put ashes on and do like the Pharisees kind of thing where you just look like puzzled, or they'll think, boy, he's just completely out of it. I'm not even going to ask, or because you don't want to bait them. Remember, this is not, you don't look like they've stepped into a bear trap here. Oh, I'm glad you asked me why I look so puzzled today. I've been hoping somebody would ask me why I look so puzzled today. It's because of this. Right? But it's again what you're doing in some of these, especially on the your crisis and your choices and things of this type, is you're opening the life up again. And the whole point here is opening up a life, and in the middle of the life is supposed to be God. If God's not in there, there's almost no sense you opening the life up, you know, except to build a relationship and a friendship. Okay, and they're appropriate. I'm not suggesting that in every single conversation, remember, don't make the Lord every third word, or don't use all these tactics at once. Like if you go in there and do this, it's just not going to work. You'll just come off looking really, really weird, and you might as well accomplish the same results with the sandwich board we talked about on the first day. Okay, but like I say, there are times as people that don't know that you're a believer, that don't know that God is active in your life, you want to open up that He is active in your life to the extent that He is. If, like I say, you do not boast about false gifts, you do not talk about areas of your life, you can talk about them. I mean, you can talk about them all day, but don't claim that God's in there yet. You can literally turn that into one of the struggles and say, I've got to be honest. I'm looking at this decision, and not to make you feel embarrassed, but I believe I'm fighting God on this thing. I really, you know, I asked the Lord into my life 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, to make me a better person, to develop the characteristics in me that, you know, I wanted to be pleased with, that I knew, you know, count in the world. And some of them have, you know, some we've gotten some progress in, and some I'm just not sure I want to do that anymore. I'm not sure And this decision, I'm having a tough time with it. I got to be honest with you. And so, I'd love to tell you, yeah, God's doing the same thing in here, and He's mellowing me out here in the middle, but I'd be lying. He's not. I've got Him at arm's length. Hey, been good to me in all the other areas I've led Him into. Believe me. But for some reason, I don't know why, I've just been stubborn about this thing. And I just got to tell you, hopefully over time, God will win this one. You know, I hope so at least. And I'll get some improvement in this because I really do. I want to be better, Joe. And you just move from there. And see, what I've done in a situation like that is I've even, you know, I've said, here's where life is. Here's where life is. I'm a Christian, you know, but I'm like everybody else. I got my flies. And again, it's a matter of, you know, pointing out where you are and where God is in your life and just including God in the conversation a little bit more. And remember, none of this, what we've talked about so far, we haven't done any preaching. See, we've proclaimed what God is to us and in our life so far. We've asked questions about them. What are you thinking about God? But we haven't tried to change their thinking yet. We're still in proclaiming our life before we go next week to content of the gospel when we get a chance to explore that a little bit further. But we are trying to manifest. Remember in our opening talk, we talked about the method that we are the epistles. We're supposed to be walking gospel tracks, to use an old terminology. We're supposed to be a letter, a love letter from God to other people. They're supposed to see this stuff. And we're not supposed to be the ooey-gooey, syrupy, mushy kind of love. It's the kind of love that Jesus showed, that teeth-gritting commitment. Just clench the jaw, go to Jerusalem, die. Wasn't going to be fun, but I'm going to do it. And he was explaining to him, here's why. Greater love hath no man than him, and lay down his life for his friends. This is why I'm going. You know, those kinds of things. And that's what we're trying to do here, is we're trying to increase our experience of God, and to the extent God has impressed himself upon us, that's what we're trying to do with these kind of statements. We're trying to develop surface opportunities in their lives, get them to be thinking about spiritual things. And some of these are situations where we're using opportunities in our life that God brings in our life to do the same thing, to open up a situation. We will talk about, even later, a different way that's more frontal and that doesn't wait for opportunities. You know, like the closest we have here, where you're sitting with your friend and you say, hey, what was the biggest thing, most meaningful thing? See, that's sort of like creating an opportunity, creating a conversation that doesn't depend upon a crisis or a mood or something of this time. We'll have a couple more of those raising awareness kinds of questions a little bit later, probably next week, maybe the week after next, in terms of content. So the section that we've looked at tonight was about proclamation, where we're trying to turn our works basically how we live our life, the things we do and have done, and the community experience, turn those into some kind of words, turn those into some articulation, somehow be able to make a statement about God in my life or God in lives in general, or about spiritual experience. And that's what we've looked at tonight. Let me mention, we're running early here, so I think we're going to be able to actually leave on time. And I want to make a comment about next week. Next week we're going to get into a little bit more theology as well, because we get into content. You know, our homework exercise that we'll look at, if you look at the content, we're going to look at page 14. We've got the Christian buzzwords table, translation table. And it's a matter of trying to understand how we're going to move from the left. So far all we've identified is that God is at work in our life, that somehow God got involved in our life. We asked Him in. Somehow He came into our life. And we've got to eventually get to where they understand how to do that. And that's where we're going to proceed. Now, we had one last on the assignment, I think. Then we have, which was the one we didn't read? Oh, okay, on assignment 10. On assignment 10, let me just read that. Proclamation for each person on the starter list. Try to make an initial guess as to which approach you might use. Choose a first choice and a second choice from the list of approaches given in the proclamation section. Remember, we talk about friendship setting, personal strength approach, past prayer. But each one of those we had a sort of name for. And give a brief explanation as to why you selected the first choice. So you may not have enough data to know how to do this, but if you know somebody, for example, is particularly, they might be open, but they would be hostile to a prayer approach, an asking prayer approach, but might appreciate a past prayer approach, you have to do that on the basis of just sort of your read of that person right now, just sort of where you are. And the why question, of course, is to stimulate your thinking as to why this would work or why not, in terms of why, how am I reading this person? Where would this, you know, because some of these would not even fit you. In other words, some of those approaches you may not be able to do. Because either the way you are perceived in the audience, in your associates rather, where you're perceived there, it would just be so out of character, at least at this point, that you couldn't use it. Certainly in many cases, by the way, if you used my terminology, it wouldn't work at all either, because that you've got your own idiom, and they'd sit there and say, where did you memorize that? Nobody ever says you're fixing to do something in this part of the country. Okay, right. And so, yeah, here we go. He does, that's right.
That's from some idiom.
That's right, somewhere. That's what it says in the original Hebrew. Somewhere, you know, fixing to do such and such. So take a thought, because we're starting to think about what opportunities will look like in terms of introducing, or not introducing God into their lives, but opening your life up to God. Because some of what you have to do is to start thinking about how God is doing this in your life. See, because remember, one of our first assignments was to come up with unambiguous answered prayer, unambiguous cases of providence, unambiguous cases of His presence in your life. See, that is not a simple exercise always. Because you've got to be real skeptical and try to shoot your own answers down. And see, this was wishful thinking. This was not. That wouldn't work. In other words, you role play the skeptic backwards and say, no, I don't have the con. But yes, that one was. And that one, I don't have an equally valid explanation of how that would have occurred. I really don't. You could work out some kind of version of it, but statistics are so against it. I mean, just it's ridiculous to believe that. So we're doing the same thing here in this proclamation about where is God in our life and what can we honestly say He's done? And what can we honestly say He hasn't done in the case of those struggles? This is an area I'm still struggling with. I know I have a problem here. God's been working on this. I get encouragement every now and then. I see incremental improvement, but I know I've got a long way to go. But I have confidence. I've seen God change other things in my life that weren't quite as difficult as this. So I've got an audit trail of success. I can believe that God will do a similar thing in these more difficult ones. Let's close in a word of prayer. Father, we thank You for Your love. We thank You for Your patience, Your nurture, your transformation. You told us to be transformed by the renewing of our minds, and you're after us all the time for this. You want us to grow. You want us to experience freedom. You want us to experience your presence in our life. You want us to experience life, meaningful and depth of significance. You really want this. And we know that you're actively involved. We would like to be more aware of this ourselves and be able to share this with other people that would delight in the same way, in the same things, once they came to know you. So we ask that you would take this time that we spent and our understanding of what you're doing in our lives and in each other's lives and help that spill over for the sake of your Son. Amen.